Last week, while talking about healing through resilience, Julie Stoneberg shared Rumi's words, "The wound is the place where the light enters you." And this, of course, reminded me of Leonard Cohen's anthem, "There is a crack in everything. That's how the light gets in." And then, coming at this from a different approach, Bruce Cockburn tells us that we need to kick at the darkness until it bleeds daylight. Darkness and light. We're still in the time of darkness after solstice, but with gradually returning light. And we are still deep in the darkness of the COVID pandemic, but with the distant possibility of light through vaccines. And a recent New Year's message from the Canadian Unitarian Council offered these words from L.R. Nost. "Do not be dismayed by the brokenness of the world. All things break, and all things can be mended. Not with time, as they say, but with intention. So go, love intentionally, extravagantly, unconditionally. The broken world waits in darkness for the light that is you." Well, duality is a basic feature of life itself. And when I first confronted this January theme of consolation and desolation, I had some difficulty with it until I realized it was simply a different take on this question of duality and ways to address it. We're certainly familiar with the experience described by consolation and desolation. I have to say, I had never encountered this specific approach before. The Touchstone's journal listed a series of dualities that characterize consolation and desolation: love and hate, joy and sorrow, peace and anxiety, patience and impatience, kindness and rudeness, goodness and evil, and so on. Now, consolation, among other things, is empowering, while desolation is a state of powerlessness, not unlike that experienced when someone is depressed. Now, these polarities of desolation and consolation were explored in depth in the 16th century by St. Ignatius of Loyola, who made them a centerpiece of his spiritual exercises. For Ignatius, they described the relationship one had with God. Closeness to God resulted in feelings of consolation, while distance from God led to feelings of desolation. Consolation and desolation comprise a spiritual compass in terms of the choices one makes and the direction one is traveling in life. Now, for those of us who do not find God language useful, consolation can be understood as all that is life-affirming, while desolation refers to that which is life-denying. Margaret Silf, in her book Inner Compass, An Invitation to Ignatian Spirituality, writes about some of the main symptoms of desolation and the most commonly experienced blessings of consolation. Desolation turns us in on ourselves, drives us down the spiral ever deeper into our own negative feelings, cuts us off from community, makes us want to give up on things that used to be important to us, takes over our whole consciousness and crowds out our distant vision, covers up our landmarks, and drains us of energy. While on the other hand, consolation directs our focus outside and beyond ourselves, lifts our hearts so that we can see the joys and sorrows of other people, bonds us more closely to our human community, generates new inspiration and ideas, restores balance and refreshes our inner vision, and releases new energy in us. Now, Ignatius wanted people to focus on interior movements, which he called motions of the soul. These motions include thoughts, imaginings, emotionings, emotions, inclinations, desires, feelings, repulsions, attractions, and more. And a tool for this focus of the spiritual compass was what Ignatius called the examine of consciousness. The examine is a practice that encourages you to bring the character of your day into greater awareness. It involves both remembering and reflection and has several parts. First of all, how has that which is most precious and profound been active in your life during the day? You're asked to call to mind the thoughts, feelings, and actions that seem to stand out the most. How did you attend to life during the day, and how did you respond? Now, the second part is a meditation or prayer of aspiration. In light of what the day has been, what do we aspire to for tomorrow? What in us or in our relationships with others needs attention or healing? And the third part involves capturing the most striking points of the daily examine in a journal. Now, this can be just simple notations or a more extended dialogue with yourself, with others, and or with the precious and profound. Reverend Molly Hausch Garden, in writing about the examine, says, "The goal of this exercise is to locate the places where we feel challenged and to interpret those places as an invitation to growth and to change, or at least to a deeper reflection and self-understanding." Ignatius believed that through this careful and regular self-examination, we could find and acknowledge our own blind spots and know ourselves more truly. Now, feelings of consolation are those that give rise to life, love, peace, joy, creativity, and communion. These signal a life-giving path, and they are harmonious with the spirit, even when painful. Feelings of consolation don't always mean that we are at ease or comfortable, but that we are moving in the right direction toward abundance and fulfillment. And the flip side of this coin, of course, is desolation. Feelings of desolation give rise to confusion, alienation, and discord. When we feel desolation, we know that we have moved or been moved down a path that is not truly our own. But there is wisdom there, and time on the wrong path is never wasted when we are willing to learn about ourselves from its struggle. The challenge is to understand that both are necessary in the abundance of life. Dark and light must both move through our lives for either to have meaning. Now, so far I've been talking, the focus has been on the individual. That is where the spiritual practice of seeking consolation begins. But what happens when desolation moves beyond the individual to a wider community? We are certainly in a time when many of us experience desolation, a sense that the world has lost its way. Driven by the pandemic, by economic and political instability, and so on. And this sense of desolation can evoke strong negative emotions. So trapped in this kind of pessimism, it can be difficult to either imagine or seek consolation as an individual. But as part of a community such as ours, other possibilities exist. last week, the closing hymn called us to come sing a song with me that I might know your mind, and I'll bring you hope when hope is hard to find. It is important for us to be present for one another, to be present in times of both desolation and consolation. And we can hear those two sides in that are presented in popular song. Ben E. King, as we heard last week, suggests that he won't be afraid as long as you stand by me. Well, Bill Withers tells us to lean on me when you're not strong. So we can either find the crack that lets the light in, or kick at the darkness till it bleeds daylight. So whichever side of the equation we are on, we can be present for others, and we can call on others to be present for us. Nicholas Jones writes about being present for others. To accompany another is to give companionship against desolation. Against desolation, one who accompanies offers consolation, being with another in their solitude by creating opportunities for testimony, listening and hearing without judgment, and reinforcing the other's dignity by acknowledging their experience and struggle. When compassion opens us to the struggles of another in situations that induce desolation, it can be difficult to discern an appropriate response. The temptation is to manage the other's condition, to offer solutions or platitudes. But desolation is not a fault to be managed, and efforts to the contrary deny our powerlessness against the other's vulnerability. Adopting the stance of accompaniment, by contrast, embraces the truth the other knows all too well, and in doing so, embraces the other. It succeeds not by resolving problems, but by aligning with the other, experiencing the other's suffering in common, and responding with speech or action or silence in ways that don't obstruct the other's efforts to confront their situation. Both consolation and desolation come to us in the course of our lives. In reaching out to anyone suffering desolation to offer consolation and forge a connection, we need empathy. In her poem, Kindness, Naomi Shihab Nye reminds us that kindness can only be known as the deepest thing inside when sorrow is also known as the other deepest thing. In our own or another's sorrow, we confront the reality of desolation and the desire for consolation. The work of consolation is the work of mending the soul of yours and mine. In the poet's words, before you know kindness as the deepest thing inside, you must know sorrow as the other deepest thing. You must wake up with sorrow, you must speak to it till your voice catches the thread of all sorrows and you see the size of the cloth. In the words of Henry Nguyen, we need to be angels for each other, to give strength and consolation. When we realize that the cup of life is not only a cup of sorrow, but also a cup of joy, will we be able to drink. And an element that is important when being present for others is equanimity. Now, I've certainly spoken in the past about the Buddhist practices that include loving kindness, compassion, sympathetic joy, and equanimity. And Patrick Offals writes about this. But what is equanimity? Equanimity manifests as a radical openness to the whole of life, a soft receptiveness that allows us to see experience clearly and to feel experience deeply, but that does not react for or against it. Equanimity is the art of retaining one's mental and emotional balance amid the ever-changing circumstances of life. Equanimity is not unshakable because it is rigid, a rigid, immovable mass immune to all disturbances. Rather, it is strong because it is resilient. So, I think we can all be seen as being in some state of desolation or consolation, and often a blend of the two. Each of us has to take responsibility for our own situation, and the Ignatian examen can be a valuable spiritual practice in this regard, though it is only one of many forms of practice that can help us through both darkness and light, building resilience. I will end by repeating these words that I began with from L.R. Nost. Do not be dismayed by the brokenness of the world. All things break, and all things can be mended. Not with time, as they say, but with intention. So go. Love intentionally, extravagantly, unconditionally. The broken world waits in darkness for the light that is you. So may it be so, and may we help make it so.